Well, the last few days on the program, we've had questions pop up regarding this insect or that insect. Yesterday, Scott Craven said, you know, we ought to be talking to Phil Pelletieri about some of these bugs instead of me. And so guess what? Here's Phil Pelletieri with me in the studio to talk insects and the bugs that are bugging you perhaps a little bit, or maybe you just got some questions about insects. And certainly if you want to join in with an insect question, now's a good time at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Phil, welcome back.
Nice to be here, Lur.
Yesterday, one of the questions, a caller called and said, you know, there were some insects on his window that were they weren't box elder bugs. They were quite a bit larger than box elder bugs. Not thousands of them, but a few of them, and they smelled to high heaven.
Okay, that's the giveaway. There's a creature that we call a western conifer seed bug. It's technically a type of leaf-footed bug, and it's kind of a chestnutty brown color with a few little bit of white swiggles in the forewings, a little bit of black markings. It's often found in areas that have both pine or spruce trees because the insect feeds on the seeds of those. But just like the box elder bug, they try to congregate and overwinter as adults. And not as numerous, but the giveaway is the odor. If you touch them, they have a very distinctive odor. And so people will often refer to them as stink bugs. And all they're doing is looking for a nice sheltered spot like a box elder bug to squeeze into. And then if that happens, you may be blessed with them all winter long.
Okay. So what's the name of the bug again?
Western conifer seed bug.
Western conifer seed bug. Okay, well, that's one question we didn't get answered yesterday. We've got it answered today. Jake in Madison has a question for you. Jake, hello.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could tell us about gypsy moths. I was told yesterday by just somebody on the street to expect an invasion coming up in the next year or two.
Well, we had in the Madison area probably as an intense an infestation. There are various trees on both the east and west side of the city that were totally stripped of leaves, and people were complaining about caterpillars crawling on the side of their houses and the like. And a lot of this is related to spring weather. And the fear is the populations will continue to build if we have dry springs. And for that reason, I know the city of Madison is looking into having the city sprayed in spring to try to knock the populations down. Now, the other real benefit would be if we had a cool, wet period sometime in May, which tends to promote a natural disease, a fungus disease. But, you know, you can't bet on the weather. So that's what they're talking about. The last two springs have been very good for the gypsy moth, and we have not seen much disease. And because of that, that's why, at least in the Madison area, they're considering doing some spraying.
So if we get a wet spring, it's less likely.
Oh, yeah. We had a real big outbreak of this fungus disease about 3 years ago when we had what we would all complain about as a bad spring. But yeah, we had a very wet, cool period, and the fungus disease just knocked the socks out of the population. So that's encouraging in the long run. But in the interim, again, we had some beautiful bur oak trees, you know, 150, 200-year-old trees that were totally stripped. If that happens a second time, then those trees may suffer from chestnut borer or other problems. And so we're kind of getting at that decision time for some of the trees in Madison. Now, it's interesting. I live, you know, maybe a half a mile from some of these trees, and I didn't see any activity on the bur oak on my neighbor's property, and that's kind of the way it's at right now. But as I said, we can only expect the populations to increase dramatically if the weather is right.
Thanks, Jake, for calling. Appreciate it. Jackie in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have had an infestation of pill bugs, saw bugs, those little things that roll up. They came in apparently through an unheated 8-foot crawl space under our property and ended up above the fluorescent fixtures or under the fluorescent fixtures that are in our recreation room. How the world did they get in there? What can I do to get rid of them?
Well, you know, they won't do well indoors. It's too dry. There's nothing to eat. And so what you tend to find is a lot of dead bodies over time.
You betcha.
And for that reason, it's kind of tracing it back where they come from. They need some semblance of moisture. Sometimes, in fact, what I think happens is it gets so wet that it literally drives them out of the soil, and that maybe they're seeking higher ground. But they also need organic matter. And so you tend to find the people that use bark mulch or other things around the outside of the house are more likely to see them. Would expect to see them more on the north side than the south side, again, just because the conditions are better. But what happens with millipedes and sow bugs a lot in the fall is they're wandering around in these cool nights, And when the sun comes up, they really don't remember where they came from, and so they kind of by accident wander in. And so what we try to get people to think about is where could you possibly caulk or seal or use expanding foam or somehow tighten things up enough that they stay outside and don't have an opportunity to squeeze in.
So cover it up or caulk it between the cement and where the wood is?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Peggy and Brilliant, your turn. Hi, Peg.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a problem with some beetles, pesky beetles. Last year we noticed them on our hostas in the front yard in the shade garden, and they seemed to, like, the babies seemed to ride on the parents, and they just seemed to pile. It's funny, but they pile on top of each other. And when they first come out, they're completely coral, pinkish color. But as they get older, more to the adult stage of a beetle, they have black wings that come over the top of that. So you can't see the peach as well once the wings are there. But if you take and push a bunch of them over when they're all on top of each other in a pile on top of the hostas, you'll find these ones that are adult size, but they're all like a peach color. And they're like a when you find an ant and you find the queen, this seems to be like their queen. They'll, like, cover her right back over again. Or I'm wondering what these things are. They're climbing all over. They don't chew plants, luckily enough.
See, I don't think they're beetles, first of all. And what I think those were are immature, what we call nymphs, and everything fits for box elder bug. Both the color pattern and it's not a queen. I think it's more a coincidence that they're congregating because the females lay their eggs and there's really no parental care going on here. But what you often do see is a mixture of various growth stages of nymphs and adults mixed together. And again, it would also explain, because when you started saying something on hostas, there are so few insects that attack hostas, no beetles, no true bugs, but it's all fitting for what I expect for box elder bugs.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Peg. Betsy in River Falls, on to you. Hi, Betsy.
Hi. I have a fun story to tell about what I think is a yellow jacket.
Okay.
My sister and I were up in Minocqua, and we were having a picnic in Torpy Park in Minocqua, and we were eating chicken. And there was a box of chicken, and then I was eating a piece, and the yellow jacket was really interested in the piece I had, so I put it down on the table and got another piece, and I watched the yellow jacket, I assume, go over and bit off a piece of it, the chicken. He pulled it with his little legs, and he bit it with his little mouth parts. And he must have chewed off a piece of chicken that weighed about the same size he did. I didn't weigh either of them because it was kind of dangerous. And then he flew away with it. It was fascinating. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. So I just wanted to say, yeah, yeah, insects, and yeah, yeah, watch them. They're interesting.
Well, you know, you even find them on carrion sometimes, too, for the same reason as they are going after the meat, because it's a protein source to feed their young. And this is a phenomenon we see in the fall. It's been interesting. In the southern part of the state, I would say the yellow jackets are as quiet as I can remember them in my career. Typically they make it very hard to eat or drink outdoors and from even the middle of August. But I have in all my runnings around, I think, seen only two or three outdoors. And now I know it's a little different up north, and I think that's somewhat related to the dry weather. And this phenomena will continue until we get probably two or three good hard frosts. So I usually tell people we're not out of the season until about the 1st of November.
So if one were having a picnic, one could put pieces of meat out before the picnic. And so I do that with orange soda if I'm having a picnic before, so that they get fill up on that.
Well, they often use traps. In fact, Mountain Dew seems to be a favorite thing.
I don't want to trap them. I just want to get them fed.
Then I'm a little concerned it's the other side, because what we find is they can communicate, not quite as sophisticated as honeybees, but if one yellow jacket finds a free restaurant, they are going to bring other yellow jackets in. So we usually suggest the opposite is to stay away from a food source, garbage cans, those kind of things, because they're used to coming into that area. So usually if you go into a new area, you're okay. And again, keep the food out as short as possible time.
Okay.
Because I'm afraid what you would be doing if you bring something out earlier is they just keep coming in.
Oh, I thought I'd fill them up, but I guess not. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Betsy, for calling. Robert in Decorah, Iowa. Hello to you.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have this two hibiscus plants in my apartment, and out of nowhere one day, a bunch of little white flying insects, like, hovering around it, and then, like, they're drawn towards the plant. So I was getting kind of scared because I don't know what kind of insect that was. I was wondering if you have any ideas of what kind of insect that is and how I get rid of them.
The critter's called a whitefly, and it's a tropical insect, but be honest, it goes outside on tomato transplants and the like. And we do have the problem in the fall of them flying indoors And okay. So, you know, that may be the source. Now, unfortunately, they are a real stinker to control. And you can try insecticidal soap or you can try any houseplant sprays. But what's more critical about what you use is the timing. And okay. We tell people you've got to treat them three times spaced 5 days apart. And okay. You have to hold to that calendar. If you do not, you have to start over. And the reason is okay. They have their eggs and other life stages that are not susceptible. And what you're kind of do is bleeding out the susceptible stage.
I dumped a whole bottle of insect stuff I had for my garden because I don't want to use it on my garden stuff. So I bought it, but I never used it. I put it on these plants, and I put them outside for a week. And they came back, and they're strong as ever. It's like,
yeah. Yeah, one treatment never does it. And as I said, the mistake people often will make is you kind of get kind of a knockdown with that first treatment and think you won the war, and they'll be right back at you. And so, as I said, it would probably be three treatments. And you do have more options when you take the plant outside as far as products that are registered for this use. And a lot of landscape sprays would work. But as I said, it's a question of come after it every 5 days, as thorough a job as you can do, and that should take care of it.
Awesome. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Eau Claire, hello to you.
Yeah, so I've got a question on wasps. I built a new house out in a rural area, and so far I've tried to spray all the visible wasp nests, but the sunny side of the house is just inundated by hundreds and hundreds of wasps. Is there anything I can do to discourage them from hanging out in that area?
Is it this just been a late summer phenomenon, or is there something you see all the time?
It happened last year, and I sprayed again last year, and then we got a frost. It was okay, and they're back again this year.
Well, I'm wondering if you're seeing queens looking for overwintering sites, which is what you might expect about this time of the year. And you can try the same sprays we use for ladybugs, you know, to put on the outside to give you a knockdown. But unfortunately, I think it's just an environment they'll be attracted to.
Oh. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, our guest here on the Ideas Network. We're talking the world of insects now with Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Carrie in Willard is online on the phone, so let's go to Carrie now. Hi, Carrie.
I don't have an insect problem. I would like to encourage the black swallowtail or parsley caterpillar. I grow the parsley, and now I don't know what to do with it in the fall and the winter. I don't want to kill the immature butterflies, and I'd like to know if I can clean that up or if I should wait till late next spring or what.
Well, the main thing is most of them now, I assume you don't have any more larvae left?
Well, actually, no, I don't see them right now. This is in general. There's been other years when it's just been loaded with them, so I always continue to grow the parsley, but right now there's nothing on them.
Well, the thing is what you would expect to find is chrysalises, and many times these caterpillars will migrate away from the food source to make the chrysalis. And so, but it honestly may be just a little bit safer to leave that just in case there's a chrysalis wrapped up in that plant debris. You know, they are pretty much now conditioned because of the short day length not to emerge until next spring. They have to go through the cold shock. So that would be the point, is that in the small chance there's a chrysalis there, or just be careful when you're taking the plants out. If you see any, they're usually kind of a tannish color, maybe about an inch and a half long, has almost like little horns on them, just the way that the chrysalis is structured. But it's rather well camouflaged. And as I said, usually it wouldn't be on the plants. It would move off into the litter in adjacent areas in order to make the chrysalis and then emerge next spring.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks, Carrie. Jamie in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. I have a couple questions.
Okay.
First, over Labor Day weekend, I was in southern Michigan, lower Michigan, for a family reunion, and we were watching this hummingbird, and then this other thing came up that looked very much like a hummingbird, but when we looked at it closer, realized it was an insect. Is there a butterfly or a moth that...
Yeah, there's a whole family of moths that we call hawk moths, in or sphingids is the fancy name, and many of them, the bigger ones, are the same size as a hawk moth, and they hover in a very similar manner. So I'm sure it was one of those species. It's just a question if you got a real good look at it. Some of them have little pinks in their wing markings. I got a real delightful email today from a friend up in Door County who sent a picture of one. that normally is found in the tropics. And I haven't gotten the specifics, but we do see these kind of strays sometimes coming in there. And so there are Florida hawk moths that do show up in Wisconsin. And typically it's the later summer that we tend to see them.
Great. I did get a good digital picture of it, so I can send it to you if you'd like.
Oh, yeah. I'd be more than happy to take a peek.
Great. The other question I have is about some, I think they're wasps. In our yard, we have a big bunch of junipers, and I notice when I mow around them, they'll start flying around. And I haven't been stung. They haven't acted aggressive towards me, but they just kind of hover around like they're letting me know they're there.
Right. There has to be a nest, and it's just a question, is it a ground nest or is it a paper wasp nest that's in the interior of the tree? They are most defensive when the nest is threatened. But if you've gone this far without getting stung, aside from being, I think, a little careful when you're close to that, I think you can kind of let things go. They will freeze out, and we're, you know, within probably 3 weeks or so of things quieting down. And then maybe you can just kind of examine. The other thing you could do is, if you really thought you had to deal with it, is to just kind of, without the lawnmower, just get close to the tree and just spend a little time on a nice sunny day like this and watch. You should be able to see enough comings and goings to get the idea that they're going into the ground or, again, moving into an area of the tree where you'll probably find a paper wasp nest.
Okay, and then will they come back next year to that same location?
No, they don't reuse the nest, so there's no reason to worry about that part of it. So as I said, you know, it almost sounds like you can let them be without any concerns.
Sure.
But we do have a lot of problems, usually starting in August, the nest getting big enough that the critters are quite defensive. And again, people on their lawnmowers or hedge clippings and whatnot often run into them and run a good risk of getting stung at that time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, 2 years ago I was mowing and we had a stump that we hadn't removed yet, and I kind of ran the mower up on that stump, and the next thing, and this was the day of the Ironman competition, so it was September, right around the 1st of September, and man, I had about six bites on my face before it happened so fast.
Yeah, it's instant. We that's really where it gets the most dangerous, because you can get the multiple stings, and the stinger is not barbed, so one can get you a number of times individually, let alone all of its sisters. And these are all females at this time of the year that are out being active. And same thing with people walking and unfortunately slipping into a nest is a real dangerous situation.
Yeah. Linda and Edgar, it's your turn next. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I hope you can explain this to me, and I'll try to be as descriptive as possible. We have these little, they look like a worm. They're short, they're black, but they have a hard shell on there. So it's like a segmented, on the top. But, if you step on them, it's crunchy. So.
They're millipedes.
Okay. We have, a lot of them.
Yes.
I don't mind that they want to hang outside, but we have a pet door, and they decided to join us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, is there something that I could, put outside my pet door to keep them from coming in? I've never seen, we have pockets of, in our gravel driveway, of, hundreds of them.
Yeah. And that's, it's typical in the late, especially September, and millipedes are normally found in soil, especially that has a lot of organic matter. So it's not so much lawn grass, and it definitely wouldn't be a gravel driveway. But what I assume is that you have CRP land, prairie grass, something where you're getting a lot of thatch. And so that's the main source of the millipedes. But they're mostly active at night. And so what they're doing is crawling all around the place. And then when the sun comes up, they're looking for places that are cool and damp, which often force them on garage slabs, the north sides of houses and whatnot. And often by accident forces them indoors, which is a dead end for them. I mean, they can't live there. They dry up and die. And as you say, you got all these crunchy worms on the floor when you kind of move through. What I find then is, if you're going to stop them, rather than spraying the outside of that pet door, which won't be all that effective, they'll crawl through it and die in the house anyway, whether you treat or not, is to draw the line in the sand out farther on where you think they're coming from. And so if you're going to use a type of spray or a granular insecticide, you put a 5 or 10 foot wide barrier or band between where you stop mowing and where this long grass or source comes from. Now, if you're surrounded by this, then you have to do your whole perimeter of your property.
And that's we live out in the country, so you're talking more than, a 3/4 acre of the lawn, and then it goes into 100 acres of land. So I don't know.
Well, but, you know, if you think about it again, you can put this on with a drop spreader like you would put fertilizer on, and you don't do your whole three-quarters acre. You just do this band between where you stop mowing. And I'll be honest with you, if you were to ask me when to do it, I would do it the 1st of September. I think it's late enough now that you kind of say, why bother? They've kind of already gotten to you, you know, and other than vacuum up what's there, there really isn't much you can do other than maybe look at the pet door to see if there's any way you can get it to fit a little tighter so they can't squeeze in quite as easy.
Yeah, that would be a good thing. So it's a band of what is it again?
Well, you know, any landscape insecticide, you know, they use things like Ortho Bugbegone has a granular form that could be used. And you could put a spray on, too, with a hose end attachment. Again, we call this a barrier treatment. It's kind of putting a barrier of insecticide that they have to crawl through. And in this case, as I said, rather than putting it around the outside foundation, which I think is too close to the house, I would put it out more towards, I think, the source is.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, that was kind of interesting. Never seen so many in my life.
Okay, Linda.
Yeah, I mean, I have people that tell me that they can fill up a 5-gallon bucket every day on the ones that are sitting in their garage. And as I said, I think it's that cool slab that's attracting them. And so people spraying the garage is worthless. Concrete is a terrible thing to spray because it's like a sponge, and that's not where they're coming from. As I said, I think you can kind of usually think this through and identify where the likely place they're coming from and stop them before they get to the garage or home or whatever.
Okay.
So do they serve a purpose, or I mean, do they turn into anything, or are they just stay in that little state of crunchy worm?
You could make the argument that they help recycle nutrients because they feed on decaying organic matter and digest it and whatnot. So they are important in that point. But once they get in the house, as I said, there's nothing for them to do there other than die. It's too dry, among other things, plus there's nothing to eat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Linda, for calling. Kyle in Gays Mills, you are next. Hi, Kyle.
My name's Kai.
Oh, Kai. Sorry, Kai.
It's okay.
What can we do for you?
Well, earlier in the summer, I think, there was these weird, like, stink bugs, only smaller. They were black with yellow and red dots on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, like, eating up everything they, like, went on there. They were eating up the rhubarb, the garden. They just ate it, and they just eventually die, but there's just thousands of them.
Yeah, we had a population, believe it or not, these are the immature stage or nymphs of the green stink bug, but they're black with all these other markings on them. But the adult stage is a greenish, middle light green insect about the size of your thumbnail. And for whatever reason, we had populations that I don't remember ever seeing in more in the northern part of the state, really, than even down here. It's a sucking insect and primarily is a pest of fruit. On tomatoes, it causes little ghost spots. In other fruit, if it feeds on it early enough, it can cause a blemish or a dimple. Grapes, we see some problems on. My guess is that next year we're not going to see these kind of numbers. As I said, if I just go back historically what I've seen, and I wish I understood why they had such a good year. It's a little interesting, though, that stink bugs are typically considered more of a southern insect. And, you know, what we've seen so often lately is a lot of things that we're usually doing very well down south have all of a sudden decided Wisconsin is a better place to be. And I honestly think it's related to the mild winters that we've been having.
Hmm.
I see.
Thanks, Kai.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Jim in Eau Claire, hello to you.
Yes, hi, Mr. Pelletieri. Last spring I saw a bug, a flying insect. He was about 4 inches long, very thin. His wings were about 3/4 of an inch of the length of his body. He was about milk chocolate brown, and he had long pincers.
On the front end or back end?
On the front.
4 inches, wow.
He was very thin.
Yeah, see, that's what's kind of throwing me. In the 4-inch class, you know, I can think of some of the longhorn wood-boring beetles that Prionus is one of the genuses that's really quite big, but they're a bulkier critter. And when you said thin, I was thinking we might go towards some of the ichneumonid wasps that have very long egg-laying devices that look like a stinger out the back end.
No, it wasn't that.
Oh, okay.
I would recognize that.
Okay, now I got it. But thin. See, the other critter that's got great big pincers on the front are some of the Dobson flies. The males have tremendous long jaws, which are honestly totally harmless. But again, it is long and skinny, but I wouldn't say thin. I mean, that thing might be an inch and a half wide at the widest part towards the end of the abdomen.
No, this fella, with his wings closed and everything, he was a quarter inch, maybe 3/8.
Wow.
Yeah, the pincer part doesn't fit because that's more of a beetle or something. And again, those are bulkier animals. So,
with his wings spread, I believe there was four of them.
Mm-hmm.
With his wings spread, I suppose that was 3 inch from tip to tip.
Huh.
He flew very well. I can't remember about legs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean,
I'm sure he had some.
With wings, it's got to be an insect. There's no two ways about that. And again, I'm just trying to think of things that start to get into the 3 or 4 inch size range
from the tip of his pincers to the back of his abdomen. He was as wide as my hand.
Okay, see, and again, that's what's throwing me is not the size, but to have pincers in the front and not be a bulkier insect. So I'm stumped on that one.
You didn't get a picture, did you, Jim?
I wish I had.
Oh, man, I wish you had, too.
He was very docile. I had him in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's...
Well, you know, if you get a chance sometime on the internet, do a search on Dobson flies just to see. Because as I said, of all that you told me, that's the closest thing. But, you know, I think you're going to see that, unfortunately, a Dobson fly is wider than what you're describing.
Mm. By the way, your insect diagnostic lab, your website is quite a popular website. You get lots of hits on that. Maybe we should remind people where that is and so forth.
Well, you know, I'm in the entomology department, so if you do a search on Wisconsin entomology, you'll get to our department homepage and just go under outreach and then diagnostic lab. So you can go through the menu that way. If you want the address, it's entomology is entomology.wisc.edu. And then to get to the lab right away, you just do a / and entodiag. And that would get you to my front page or home page. Have a menu there for extension bulletins and information sheets. Have one for insect ID. And then you will get various little thumbnails, you know, inside worms, outside worms, you know, big bugs, those kind of things are the categories we have. And by no means do I have all the insects. I keep adding to that, but we try to get the more popular and common insects you see. And then on the thumbnail, we usually, if you click and it's right, we usually give you a link to something else. I also have a highlight section that I often put on in the summer. Wasn't quite as good with that this year because we had lost our main IT person and I don't quite have those skills yet. So, but those are archived for the last 6 years. And so, again, you can go back into. So if you saw something in July of 1 year, it's worth looking at some of the other years in July to see if we have similar insects.
Thanks again, Jim, for calling. And John in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. We have yellow jackets that have invaded a stud cavity of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions with that?
Well, the main thing is we find that the sprays don't work very well here because we don't know where the nest is versus where they come and go. The biggest mistake you could make is to plug it before they're dead. If you leave them be again, they will die off within 3 weeks or so. But if it's in an area like just outside the front door and you're just nervous, it's all about using a dust. And what we do is often wait until about 7 o'clock at night, and especially these cooler nights would be a good time to treat. The easiest dust to find is 7 garden dust, S-E-V-I-N. It's technically the insecticide carbaryl. Very effective. And so we just dust the entrance, and then they have to come and go through that dust, and that's what does them in. So usually a treatment done at night, the nest is totally inactive within an hour or less in the morning.
Okay. So they won't overwinter in the house?
No, they don't.
Don't worry about that.
And,
okay.
And so that's why, you know, if you've went this far along, you probably can get away with just letting it be.
Okay.
And then sometime next spring, it wouldn't hurt to caulk or plug that opening. But as I mentioned, that the mistake right now is if the colony is very active and you plug the opening, then they start coming out through light fixtures and in electrical sockets. And they're very grumpy when they get in the house. And as I said, so I often have to tell people, go back, unplug the opening, let them come and go on a normal basis. So.
Okay. Yeah, they're in an area that we don't go by much at all, so we can just leave them be.
Leave them be, and they'll take care of themselves in about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. To be honest, that colony, it's a paper wasp nest. It's inside that cavity, and there's no odor to that, so you don't have to worry about removing that. But
right.
That was started in the spring from a single queen. And now, you know, you could have literally hundreds, if not 1,000 individuals out of there, which is always quite intriguing.
It's really loud when you put your ear to the wall. There's lots of activity.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've had a couple cases where people have sealed them off, and they have literally been strong enough colony to eat their way through wallboard. You know, and so they said that's my worst nightmare when I'm talking to people is that they have sealed it off before doing something, because then, as I said, we have all kinds of problems. And oftentimes when that happens, they're often weak because they don't have any food. They don't have any food stores like honeybees. Mm-hmm. So the ones that do make it in the house don't last very long. But as I said, they tend to be pretty agitated.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, John. Dave in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, David.
Hi there. This is a question about deer ticks.
Okay.
My mother-in-law called me up last night. They have a cabin in Arborvitae, and she said that she thought there were deer ticks, like, in the house. When she was sleeping in the cabin, she got some bites.
Okay, what I would think... That doesn't
fit. I didn't think that's possible.
Well, the first thing is I will tell you is I would be suspicious they're bat bugs, which is a bed bug associated with bats. They're kind of the shape of a tick. You know, the main thing is ticks stay on your person for a number of days feeding. I mean, that's the way a tick does it, whereas bat bugs, like bed bugs, are quick hit and run type feeder. But deer ticks are not an indoor creature. We just don't.
I don't think so.
The only, though, I do see there is a soft tick associated with bats and pigeons and some other birds. That we sometimes find indoors, but that's not a tick that attaches to people. So I won't say that you never see ticks indoors, but generally speaking, it's, again, one associated with some other wildlife and not one that would feed on humans.
So it's highly unlikely. Yes. And even if it was the case, would they freeze out over winter anyhow?
Well, no, ticks survive the winter quite well. Now, in the same with the bat bugs, they can survive. They kind of go into a hibernation state. So, again, if it persists, one of the things, if she can get a specimen, would be happy to take a peek. Sometimes I find, too, some of these nuisance weevils that come into people's houses, for some reason people call them ticks. And the main thing is legs. You know, all true ticks have eight legs, four pairs. All true insects, of course, only have six legs.
Okay. Thank you much.
Thanks, Dave. Leon and Marshall, hi.
Yes, I got a question about dragonflies and then one on bumblebees. Start with the dragonfly. About June, I seen probably 500 to maybe it looked maybe 1,000 or so, and they were flying, hovering around by my house, and they'd swoop down onto the lawn. What I was thinking is maybe they were hitting, taking off mosquitoes or something. Then they'd swoop up by the pine trees and then swoop back down. What were they doing?
Well, you know, dragonflies are predators on small gnats, and so it could be mosquitoes, it could be flying ants, it could be, and they are a very visual creature. They hunt down their prey. And it's interesting, we do get these, you don't call them flocks per se, but we do get these congregations of dragonflies at times, which are quite interesting because many times you can find them a big distance away from water. So my guess is that they were finding easy pickings there. I mean, they wouldn't stick around unless there was something to eat. And again, a lot of their food are very small gnats, including mosquitoes. So you may have been correct, although it was kind of dry for most of the state to have many mosquitoes in June. So as I said, I would wonder if it was more flying ants or something like that.
Hmm.
Okay, well, I live on a hill around a swamp, so there's plenty of water around.
Okay.
Okay, the next question I got is about bumblebees. The other day, I was in my garage. It was after dark. And a bumblebee was in there, and he was kind of flying around. And I went to, I shut the garage door, and I turned off the light, and I heard him go, boom, right down to the ground. So I turned the light back on, and he kind of walked around in circles, and then up he went again. What does turning off the light do to him to make him fall down?
Well, you know, bees are day-flying creatures, and I think it's just a behavioral response. He didn't know where he was going, so it's safer to park the car than to keep going. And, you know, if there would have been any light at a window, you know, that's a trick you can use sometimes is turn all the other lights off and leave a light on by a door to try to get them to attract them out. But I guess I'd say because it was totally dark in there, he just figured it was safer just to sit down. And you might notice this at night sometimes that you will see bumblebees attached to flowers. They stay there all night long. And then in the morning as the dew goes off, then they'll fly away. In fact, I know people have used the analogy. It's like somebody's been partying too hard, and they stay out all night and then come back the next day. But again, you will never see them fly during night. And I think he was just laying low until it got light enough to be able to fly again.
Oh, very cool.
All right. I was having a little fun with him. Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Well, yeah, you know, in that case, if you've got an outside light, just open up the garage door. And
he should fly towards it.
They'd fly right toward the light.
Right.
Phil? Boy, that time really flew by. Thank you so much.
Well, these warm days, the critters are pretty active. So
they really are, and we had all kinds of people who wanted to visit with you yet. But we're out of time. Phil Pelletieri, University of Wisconsin Extension Entomologist, our guest, and he'll certainly be back, and we'll talk with him again about the world of insects. Tomorrow is another edition of Garden Talk, and we've got a doubleheader for you. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and Mike Maddox, Rock County Extension Horticulture Educator, coming together to be our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.